This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the preview show edition of the Blue Monday podcast, a three times weekly show looking at all things Ipswich Town. I'm your host, Richard Woodward, and I'm delighted to welcome back the brilliant Harry from Bath. Harry, how's it going?
All good at this end, Rich. All good. Brimming with excitement ahead of Sunday. Yes.
Yeah. I can't wait to talk about Norwich, Harry. I literally can't. My intro as well, we had a bit of a joke before we started recording about whether I should say a two and a bit times weekly show looking into all things Ipswich Town for our friends at This Week in ITFC History, who won't be listening, apparently, Harry. They don't listen. Indeed. So yes. We can say whatever we want.
Yeah, absolutely. And send them all our love. Send them all our love.
Hello, yes, hello to anyway.
We're not proud.
Anyone will take anyone. No. We can quickly dash through Sheffield Wednesday because there's not much to talk about, really. Mm. Apart from if he's listening, the Sheffield Wednesday fan who kindly listened. So we've obviously got some listenership in Yorkshire, who said, Jow's our most dangerous player. You must be joking. And, you know, curse of the tweet. Jow pops up with the last minute winner. Yeah. Heartbreaking, really. I was driving back up the M40 when that goal was announced on Five Live, and 90-minute goal, and you're thinking, come on, please be us. And of course it wasn't. No. But a lot of people probably off the fence in terms of our survival chances now, Harry, which I haven't been on that fence for some time. But it felt like that was a bit of a kick in the teeth.
Yeah, I was following the game. I was at work Saturday afternoon, but I was following the game. It was a quiet afternoon in the shop or at work, and I was keeping an eye on it. Sheffield Wednesday have struggled in front of goal, and that manifested itself, the number of chances that they missed. Forestieri had come in, he just didn't have his shooting boots on, and I was worried. The things that have hurt us most are pace and clinical finishing. Mm. We talked about it last week, and Joao combines the two. And when he came on, I just thought, no, this, let's see this out. And it was a familiar dull pain. Let's just say when the goal went in, we've been there so often this season. So
And more issues at left back as well. Obviously, Kenrock spun for the goal. I'm sure we've got questions on Nidson, but any quick thoughts there
I should have put something. There was a discussion on the Blue Monday WhatsApp, our little WhatsApp group, and I was tempted to say, why don't we play a back six? Or I had an idea of a back seven. We have two centre backs, you have two right backs, two left backs, and then you have Jordan Spence as a floating extra fullback. So we can triple up on either flank, depending on who's coming down the bloody side, so we can actually just shut them down and kill it for once and for all. But possibly a bit drastic. I don't know. It's I just don't know. I've never known us to be so porous on down the sides before. But I don't think it's just a function of the fullback positions. I think it's everything else that's gone on this season as well. But we'll come on to it later.
Yeah, we will. And maybe that back six would work against Norwich's two wingers on each side, basically, isn't it? Quick thought on NCR. Collins and Chambers missed out and are still doubts for the weekend. But NCR came in and it sounded like he did well in Pennington in a more familiar position.
Yeah, so, they did well. And to be fair, the other thing I'd say is, from what I saw of the game, Lambert got the balance, seemed to get the defensive balance of it right, because I think we had Skewson down sitting in front of them, and it was a bit of a Mick thing to me, from what I saw, that they were trying to, he was putting a screen around the defences, the central defence anyway, as best he could. And Ciala, he was absolutely fine. There was one moment, but you're always going to get one
moment.
You
always have one moment.
Yeah, he will have one moment, but other than that, I think he was fine. Now, whether on Sunday that pairing would work or not, I'm not sure, but we'll see.
Yeah, and one final thought, I guess, is Keenan Kwana. It feels like a bit of a dilemma for. I nearly said quandary. Then I will a quandary. But Quinn had a really good game at Villa, a good second half cameo. Keane, not so good. And then is this still, as we've been talking about the last few weeks, players still needing match time to get up to speed? Or is it maybe that some players are good in some systems at home and away? Is it just too early to tell on these two, Harry?
I think they're still getting up to speed. I do. The danger with going pure 4-4-2, because I know it's come up in discussions, is that the two can end up getting badly isolated if the midfield isn't working. You end up just playing two men light, and the two forwards can become isolated. So I genuinely, we said this last week. Oh God, patience. You know, we've been talking about patience for all season, really.
Give Hurst time,
and give Lambert time, give the forwards time. Yeah. As I say, you know, it takes longer for an attacking quartet to kind of wire, get the old covalent bonds, as I described them, getting them all wired up. Yeah. But I don't know. For me, one thing I would say is Kwana is not a striker. Kwana is a winger.
Yep.
He's an assister. Get him out while he looks like a striker. He has all the demeanour of a striker, but he's not. He's, you know, stick him out wide, get him pinging crosses in, and have Keane in there, and have breaking midfielders to kind of support him, and the Freddie on the opposite wing maybe just cutting inside. I personally like Judge centrally myself. Yep. I think he's the one player of that group of attackers we have who can operate in tight amounts of space. He's got that ability to kind of work his way through if Teddy isn't around. I mean, our plan B would be to move Georgie out left, bring Teddy in centrally, and then and work it that way instead. But the thing is we have some material to work with in terms of getting the attacking balance right. So it's not all is not lost. But I do think, for me, it's going to be that last eight games of the season. If we can click. But we could be gone by then. Our dark thought occurred to me with Brexit on the radio and television every day at the moment. Britain crashing out on the 29th of March, and Ipswich crashing out of the championship.
Which comes first?
It's sorry, gallows humour. But I don't know. I think that's what the whole campaign is now based on, that last group of 10 games, which isn't far off now, to see, you know, if we can build some momentum and get into that. But it will take one hell of a run to pull it off now. But we're not dead yet.
But next up, not the kind of challenge that you want when you're searching for points or searching for wins. I mean, where do we start here? For everyone listening or watching at home, Harry and I were trying to figure out our strategy for this one, because it's a tricky one, because clearly we want to do the usual professional job, and Harry's done his due diligence as always on Norwich. But similarly, it would be quite a depressing listen for an hour or so hearing how great our rivals are. So I think what we'll do is we're pretty comfortable with the starting 11 with a couple of extras. So we'll kind of do the usual through the team and talk about those. We want to talk about some of their deficiencies as well, so we'll maybe bias our time on Norwich and talk about those. But I guess we have to hold our hands up, really, don't we? The game 2nd of September appears to be this kind of crossroads moment for both clubs, where Hurst had a strategy and maybe kind of threw it up in the air a little bit and brought in three loanees. Norwich didn't have the best of games, but kind of stumbled across the idea of shoving Pukki up front and brought in Godfrey as a centre-back because Close went off injured, and have basically stuck with the same team, and it's just clicked, hasn't it? And the other thing I think both of us kind of have spotted as well is just the differences off the field as well. We were remarking about Ian Milne's maybe ill-judged comments about this director of football sporting director model and how it he's not a fan of it, but it's worked really well for Norwich, hasn't it? And I think probably both of us would view that Stuart Webber, the man behind the scenes, is arguably just as much as responsible as Daniel Farker is for where they are in the league at the moment. Where would you like to start, Harry?
It's an interesting place to start stepping right back from the whole thing. Mullet actually asked a brilliant question where he looked into the, you know, he was trying to say what could we learn from the Norwich approach. And you know, he joked, I think, about microphones and alcohol. I think it's referencing Delia, I think. But I think the difference between us over the last decade, and let's not go down the Evans route again, we'll save that till the summer, but it's the fact that when the moment has come, City have always been more ruthless and more decisive, both when things go wrong, but also when opportunities arise.
Yep.
And obviously, and I would say Webber being available, however they found out or got word of it or asked the question, that was an opportunity arising, and they really did take it. And one of the City fans said during the week, he said, Fark has put together a great blend of foreign senior and exciting homegrown players. And I put in brackets, question mark, Webber, question mark. I don't know if necessarily it was Fark who did the recruiting, but, you know, they have played a blinder in terms of getting, what Fark gets the credit for is putting the balance together. But it has clicked. There is a pattern. Some things have contributed to it. For example, a lot of the foreign recruits are now going into their second full season in Championship football.
Yeah, great shout.
So therefore, they're now suddenly they get the league. They know what it's all about. They've had two pre-seasons. The second one with a body of 40 odd games knowledge of how the mad Championship works. Plus, then the blooding through of the players. Plus, then Fark's concept, he has got a model of play, which we'll come on and talk about. So, you know, synchronizing all those three things together, it's taken them 2 years to do it since Fark came in May. And it wasn't always guaranteed, because if you think back to the summer, there were serious questions. They said, it's make or break season for Fark. They were split 50-50. City fans were, when Ben and I did the preview show, as to whether or not Fark was going to do it. And even in the Portman Road game, it was in the build-up to that, they weren't happy either.
Well, the 1-1 draw in September, I distinctly remember the away and being really unhappy with some of the substitutions, and there might have been even quiet whispers of Fark has sorted it out. So, let's not think that Norwich have been at it from minute one of this season. It has been a slow build to about September, October, and then suddenly it's gone stratospheric, hasn't it?
Just one quick point, Rich, to say as well. It's taken them 18 months to get to where they are now, 20 months nearly, whereas we tried to do it in four.
I can really commend the Talk Norwich City show between Jack and Ben. It's the two of them together. Making no obvious comments about the person who wasn't there, maybe, is a really constructive, really sensible, grown-up conversation about the two clubs. And Ben was pretty honest about our approach with Hurst. But the point I wanted to make just quickly on Norwich's behind-the-scenes stuff is, yes, kind of Delia and her husband are present and visible, maybe more so than much more than Evans is, but you've never got the sense that they are interfering. They've set the budgets, but they've always found someone to run the footballing side of the club. It was McNally for a while when Lambert was there. It's Webber kind of now, isn't it? They've never kind of I know you said, let's not talk about Evans, but one of my big bugbears for Evans is that he's never found someone proper with football understanding to run that side of the club. And I think that's where Norwich have always seemed to be better off than we are. I don't know whether you'd agree with that or not.
No, I'd agree with that. If you think about there are three windows which went badly wrong to me. Keane's first window, and because Clegg to me was not a football man to go in, he was a sports administrator. There was Jewell's final summer, and then there was last summer, where you have a manager who, for whatever reason, lacks experience, lacks confidence, whatever it is. Whereas with Mick and hopefully with Lambert, we'll see as well, you had a wizened old manager who was able to run the whole show. Ben talked about that in the interview with Jack, that it was he handed pretty much the footballing side of it over to Mick, knowing that Mick, he could trust Mick to get on with it. And it worked to a certain level. There were lots of flaws in terms of the style of football, the disconnect with the style of football and what was going on in the academy. There, you know, there were fault lines in it, but not having another football brain in there in hindsight, it's the lack of balance. You lose balance there, definitely, because you've got. Last summer, you had a rookie manager and an owner who is not a football man, and not knowing that he could actually intervene to mitigate the damage that was being done.
Yeah,
hindsight.
Exactly right. Yeah. Well, so there's a bit of back slapping for Norwich and the way they run their club.
Yeah.
Let's go through the team. Can I suggest that we start up front and work our way back? Because
sure.
Where we think there is opportunity. Moderate opportunity is at the back, so let's end with that, shall we?
Yeah, it's at the, when we talk about opportunity, Star Wars was on the other day, and you know the vent.
Oh, this is really narrow. Yeah. The size of a womp rat or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we need to use the force to get somebody in. You know, Kwan or Alan Judge to go down the tunnel. Imagining it, and then drop the bomb in on the 89th minute, and don't abuse the away fans, and then we're get the hell out of there.
And then there's a huge explosion.
explosion, basically. That's brilliant. Those are the odds.
This is what we're aiming for. So I'm going to start with, I'm going to mention his name, Pookie. Yeah. I really like Pookie.
Yeah.
He's come from nowhere, though. And so a striker who scores all kinds of goals. Started the season, perhaps in that withdrawn number 10 role, and it wasn't really working for him. And then has suddenly gone, he's got 19 goals, I think it is. Is just on a really rich vein of form, isn't he? And scored again. Did he score against Leeds? I'm trying to recall. I think he possibly did. Yes, he did. He had a tap in, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Saved one and palmed out and tapped in. But
yeah,
he's kind of he's found his form being the sole striker, isn't he?
Yeah. What does Pookie add? He's perfect for their style of football. A couple of key comments, and one's described him as sharp as a knife. It's a combination not just of lethal finishing, but of clever movement. And the phrase that really defined him, which they came out with, one of them said, his reaction time is quicker than a particle accelerator.
Right.
And I thought that's absolutely spot on.
He's Johnny on the spot, isn't he?
He really is, but it's not even that. Do you remember the playoff goal we scored against them at Portman Road? You know, sometimes when a goal goes in, you've got a 2 second pause and you think, oh my God, we're going to
score. There's a blue shirt there first,
and then the goal, then it goes into the goal and we all go mad.
Yeah.
That never happens with Pookie. If you're even watching the highlights, you think, oh my God, it's gone
really
in.
There. Yeah, yeah.
It's there. That's what he does.
Right.
He seems to, he's so incisive that way. He can just, you know, he can hit the, he reacts so quickly. And immediacy, I suppose, is the best way. One of them said he hits his shots away before defenders have a chance to react. And the other thing about him as well, because the backup of Jordan Rhodes, he does all the things Jordan Rhodes doesn't do. He's a workhorse. He defends. He hurries high up the pitch. He plays with no fuss and a smile on his face. Not that Jordan is an unhappy man, but he's got an all round attacking game, and he lifts the team. When you've got a striker in that lethal form, of course it's going to give everybody a boost, because you think, right, if we can get the ball up there, we know we're going to get some goals. It makes a big difference. Yeah.
Rhodes is kind of been in and out, isn't he?
He has played as a substitute for each of the last 7 league games.
Right.
Yeah, but he's come off the bench.
So still got 9 goals, I think. So he's contributed a bit. Obviously all about Pookie there. And they only play one up front, don't they? They never go for a 2.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they don't. It's generally one. He does come on sometimes, and Pookie will drop out wide. So they will. It's not always him for Pookie, but sometimes he'll have the two of them on. But generally, Rhodes will go in the centre. He comes on around 70 minutes. He doesn't have a fast. You know, we've heard this all before about Rhodes. Doesn't have a fantastic all-round game. Comes alive in the box. There is something else. Composure in front of goal, cool head, all the rest of it. I was joking, I was saying to myself, you know, all the narratives of this game, top versus bottom, Mick McGeddon last season, Paul Lambert returning, and you can imagine the Hollywood director saying, what else do we need? We need another story. Oh yes, Jordan, Roy Keane broke our hearts, Rose, turning up to get the dodgiest late winner. Everything is on Lambert, everything is on all the other stuff going on. You just think it'd be just like bloody Jordan Rhodes to mug a goal against us.
Love it as well. That's yeah, the worst yeah. bit.
But you see that? But I'm not sure. I still think he's a Town fan. They've written this phrase, and this keeps coming up all the time. Jordan Rhodes has fallen in love with our club. They desperately want it to be true.
Yes. Now, I think
I'm sorry to any Norwich fans listening, and I apologise. I still think he's a Blue. I don't think that will change. You know, it's the old one chooses the wizard. Your football team chooses you. I genuinely don't think. And I can only. What can I base it on? Some small things that I've seen in games when he's played against us at full time, where he might give us a polite round of applause or something. Not as obvious as Darren Bent or anything like that. But I still think, whether he's a fan of ours, he's still. Basically, I don't think he's burnt his bridges with the club. That's all I've got. Twitter comments, if I'm wrong. It's just things I've seen live at games. Particularly, I always stay on it full time. Never disappear. You always want to watch the players coming off because that's when they relax, they drop their guard, and you see them in a different light. Because then the tension of the game has gone away.
If he signed for us, it would all be forgotten, wouldn't it? And I think the trouble is, and we'll talk about Norwich fans and Lambert. Jordan Rhodes probably likes the booing as well. Probably raises his game for it as well. So don't boo Jordan Rhodes, Town fans.
No, I really wouldn't. Can we mention quickly, because there's two players. City are not a physical team. It's one thing they're not. They don't do a Millwall. They don't go out and physically dominate players. As I say, it's all about technique. It's all about it's mobility. It's all about mobility. But there are two players worth mentioning who do add a bit more physicality. One fringe player, literally 30 seconds on Denis Cerbany. He's no Zlatan Ibrahimovic, but he's strong and pretty good in the air. He's a target man who occasionally they use as a substitute. Okay. He actually, per minutes on the field, he's quite clinical, but he can link in with all of the other. Because a lot of this is all about good, clever passing play in the final third. He has that in him, but he is a physical outlet. But more relevant is Marco Stieperman. Mm. And this goes back, going back to the September game. Stieperman is worth, because he moved into a number 10 role.
Yeah.
And he's not a second striker. It's not like the way Preston used Brown. It's more... Nor is he a playmaker. He's an unconventional number 10. The only other converted left back I can think of who's moved into a number 10 or into an attacking role is Jeffrey Schlupp. It's a very unusual kind of switch to see happen.
I tend to think as deep. I haven't watched a huge amount of Norwich. I don't pretend. But I generally see him. It's kind of a facilitator for the wide players because it's a lot about the width.
Yeah,
he won't. Well, he might play a kind of through ball into a Pookie, but it's more about getting the ball quickly out wide. I tend to think with him. Is that fair?
You're right. Yeah, that's true. He in terms of the style of play, it's link play with him.
He's a recycler of the balls.
He is exactly. He's actually an out ball. Believe it or not, he's kind of a deep lying target man. There's a new one. Anyway, but that's kind of what he does. They talk about him having physicality and awkward skills. So as I say, him and Cerbany are the two who've got that physicality. In the side, particularly if Close isn't playing as for set pieces, Stieperman would be the other man to come in. But it's all about strength and an aerial presence. And the key, and you just talked about it, he will often push forward in advance of the striker, which then creates space for one or other of the wingers to then cut inside, which then gives space for the fullbacks to come up on the outside.
Yep.
So it's part of a chain reaction almost. And he presses and hurries, he holds up the play. He's a good link man. He isn't as imaginative as someone like Buendia or he isn't as technically good as someone like Pookie or Leitner, but he plays a very valuable role. And in terms of the balance of the team, you've got a target man sitting there giving some physical presence, and you've got a playmaker sitting in a deeper role, which so it does actually balance as a midfield, though it's a slightly odd way of doing it. But it's certainly, in terms of the geometry of the team, it works brilliantly. Yeah.
You mentioned Buendia there. Shall we go out to the wide players?
Let's have a look at the two wingers.
Is it fair to say that we're cracking out the peppery for these two?
I have to work out what one is chilly and one is conventional. I don't know. And one thing I'd say again, we're trying not to
big
heat phrase on them, but one of the things that again, they've got right in terms of balance is that you've got one out-and-out pacey winger and you've got one technical wide player who can trick his way and trick his way past players and who doesn't use pace as his weapon. He uses more his ability on the ball. Buendia, again, I think to me he's the bigger threat of the two over Hernandez, even though Hernandez has the pace.
He's a bit spiky with his form, isn't he, Hernandez?
Oh, yeah, he is, yeah. Should we do Buendia first, yeah? On, is that okay? Yeah, okay. It's, yes, well, yeah. Buendia, lovely passes and touches. He's good at tricking his way past players. They describe aggressive creativity with him. So he has the two together. He's a creative player, but he's quite aggressive. He came from Getafe. He's Argentine. And he has got that streetwise side to him. He's good at winning free kicks. He's good at getting in referees' faces. He's good at amplifying anything that happens against him. So if we have a naive moment, whoever is playing at left back, he's on the right side, Buendia. Whoever's playing at right back.
Oh, Harry, no.
Sorry, at left back, I mean. Whoever's playing at left back, you know, against him,
I'm worried already.
Yeah, no, exactly. I can see. Here we go. Wow. Anyway, here we go again. He will work referees. Interesting, once telling stat, I haven't checked it up, but I'm just going on what one Norwich fan said. He's missed 5 games this season and they've lost 3 of them. He is very fundamental to the way they play. But he will cut inside. He's a bit of a line heart. And they talk about when he gets substituted, occasionally, if he comes off, Rhodes comes on and Pukki drops out wide, they do lose a lot of momentum. He gives them that because he's got this ability to cut to work his way, you know, as I say, navigate his way through traffic. Sometimes he'll go bring out a round defender. Sometimes he's able to go through them. It's not about pace. It's just about his technical ability.
Can he play both sides? Because Hernandez can't he? Hernandez can switch.
He can switch. They do. They can switch, but they don't talk about switching very often. I think they tend to stay. They stay on each other's side. Yeah, they stay where they are.
It's all about the fullbacks overlapping.
Yeah, it's the relationship then with the two young fullbacks. Yeah. Hernandez. The phrase they use about him, dynamic, a direct winger with dynamic pace who will burn past players. Get him running at the fullback and it creates chances and it gets the crowd fired up. He doesn't drift inside and demand the ball in the way Buendia does. Buendia will come in, Stiepermans push forward, Buendia comes in, links play, you know, and with Pukki further ahead of them, what Pukki has what he does is his movement then creates the space for people like Buendia to actually exploit, or for one of the deeper line playmakers, Vrančić or Leitner, to come in and do some damage with. It's all, as I said, it's very well worked out. He's not as technically subtle as Buendia, but they talk about the fact that they lack pace without him. He's somebody who will. The other thing he will do is he will force teams to sit back a bit deeper. You can't play a high line with Hernandez with the ball. I don't think he's as effective as Buendia. I think Buendia is the more dangerous of the two. But he will always take his man on. He's a wind-up winger, and he has all the usual things. You know, he blows hot and cold. The big difference between him and Buendia defensively is that he is more defensively suspect. He did well against Leeds. He was tracking back a lot, but he doesn't always do that. Whereas Buendia is very diligent, and he will get back. Hernandez can sometimes leave Jamal Lewis, his left back, isolated.
And Buendia's got a, whilst he does track back, he's got a rick in him as well when he goes back and defends. He conceded a pretty dodgy penalty against Sheffield United. Okay, shoved his man over.
He did. They were cross with him over that.
So yeah. And we'll come on to defence and we'll come back to the fullbacks as well. Keep it in order. Should we talk about the two holding midfielders then? Because it was Vrančić and Tribal last week. Vrančić with the kind of deflected free kick that was probably going in anyway.
Yeah.
But Tribal, it appears, is just blossomed into this kind of quarterback type kind of holding midfielder for them, hasn't he?
He has indeed. They've got, well, it's an interesting one. The one player, I mentioned Tete because he hasn't been able to get back into the team, even though he's they've described him as having a renaissance, but he hasn't been able to get back in to the starting 11 in recent games.
He's fit, isn't he? Because I think he came off the bench against Leeds, I think.
Yeah, he did. And there's a parallel here because when we come on and talk about the back four, you've got Grant Hanley, and Rich and I were joking before we started recording, because if Mick was in charge, you've got Grant Hanley, you've got Alexander Tete. They're big, they're physical, they're probably the least
lots
technical.
Of games in them, Harry. Lots of games.
And you can get them in, do a job on the big man, keep him quiet. You can see Mick he would have them in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And the huge fundamental difference between him and Farke is they lack the mobility and they lack the comfort on the ball to be able to play the model of football that Farke wants them to play. So the pair of them Tete is he's a bench option. Maybe when if there's muck and bullets flying, that's when they would throw him on in a Millwall situation, or if they're defending a lead, he'll come on then. But in terms of he's got good discipline, positioning, and tenacity. He would have struggled. They said if he'd played against Leeds, he would have struggled for pace because if you I only watched the highlights, but the intensity of that game.
Oh, it was. I watched it, Harry. It was sickening. Do you know? They were really, really effective. Leeds are kind of the atmosphere got the better of them. Norwich got a couple of fortunate breaks here and there for the goals, but they were just really disciplined. It was a really comfortable display for Norwich, which was a surprise. Yeah. I would suggest that Tete probably, if it's a one goal game in Norwich's favour with 10 minutes to go, he probably will come on though, won't he?
He would do. Yeah, he would do. That's when you would use him, because then his athleticism, his physicality, he would try and shut. If we'd Alan George nipping around in there, you'd put Tete in, because it's also his experience, which is really, really good. He's in his early 30s now. The other interesting problem they've got is Vrančić. The alternative to Tete is Tribal. Tribal is keeping Tete out, and he is a version of Tete in the sense that he'll
roam a bit more, won't he?
He does roam a bit more. He is primarily a sitter of the, you know, as I say, it's Vrančić or Leitner for the more deep line playmaker role. But the thing they like about Tribal is that he acts as a foil to the more creative and energetic midfield partners, which is a really good talent if you're a holding midfielder. He can adapt his game depending on who he's playing with in that midfield trio, or who his defensive midfield partner is. So if it is someone like Tete, he can then add a little bit more ball playing, push forward a little bit more. If it's someone like Leitner, he could quite happily then, or Vrančić, he can then actually just be a bit more supine and work around him. It's a real skill. Vrančić, though, the Vrančić-Leitner thing is fascinating, because I think Farke has got a real problem. These are the two deep-line playmakers within the side. Now, Leitner is come back to, you know, he's rebuilt his career. He played for Dortmund, went to Lazio, it all went wrong. Then he came to Augsburg, and then from there across to Norwich. And he's the magician in the team in many ways. The link to everything for everything they do, receiving the ball from Krull to playing a killer pass, creating scoring opportunities. You talk about Stieperman vacating the space in front of him, Leitner's the man to go in and take advantage of that, link up with Wendy, a link up with Pukki, or play Hernandez to release some, you know, to blitz down the wing. He seems to be everywhere. They've no one like him. He can also read the game, and he can control the tempo of the game, which is a real skill.
I think I might have confused Tribal and Leitner.
And Leitner before. Together, yeah, or Tribal and Vrančić, yeah.
Didn't play against Leeds.
No, he didn't play against Leeds because he has had an injury.
Okay, sorry.
He's been out. Sorry. Yeah.
No, no, too many midfielders, Harry.
There's too many German midfielders.
Too many German midfielders.
Because you've got Stieperman, Leitner, Vrančić and Tribal. And they've all come from ultimately from Germany. Tribal came from Holland, Den Haag, but he is originally German. Vrančić, we'll finish on Leitner first, because Leitner, to me, is the one player they've got who adds real quality in midfield. He is the best of all of the midfielders. He's the magician who can regulate play at the back. But the problem that Farke has is that Mario Vrančić, the Bosnia international, who came in to replace Leitner, scored two goals against Leeds, had an assist, and basically he was the man of the match. He had his game of the season in an absolutely pivotal game. And you simply can't drop him. So it's the mother of all dilemmas for Farke. My guess is Vrančić will start, Leitner will be on the bench, and he may come on. Or if he thinks that we don't have enough about us, he could play the pair of them, and that could cause us a real problem, because you've suddenly got two deep lying playmakers.
Well, there's no need to sit against us, is there, and defend?
No.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to us.
Yeah. They say he is on fire at the moment. Super Mario, they call him. He doesn't go missing is the other thing. He has the best tackle and interception numbers in the squad, as well as sublime touch and a great left foot. So he's been involved in everything good that they've been doing. The interesting thing they said about him is he's quite an understated character. He's not a look at me. He just quietly goes about his business. Probably a bit like Skusi that way, actually. Just somebody who's very unfussy in the way he plays. So as I say, you've got the formal dilemma in the midfield three is Leitner or Vrančić, in terms of who's your deep line playmaker, and then Tribal or Tete in terms of your sitter.
Yep.
and Steeperman sitting in front of them. The little quick plan B to mention is Kenny McLean, who does come off the bench.
He did, yeah. And he
can play centrally. He's left-sided, but he can play centrally or he can play out wide as well. And what he adds is industry and mobility. And they think he's very good against very energetic midfields like Brentford. That's where he comes into his own because he's actually able to keep up with the tempo of their play. He's not a physical player at all. You wouldn't play, you know, in a Millwall game. He's less likely to be have an impact. But he's an obvious. He brings energy on after 70 minutes, so he might make an appearance as well. So fascinating midfield that they've actually blended together. And I think you can see when you look at that, it is mostly the people who arrived last year from abroad, and you can see how they've all suddenly come into focus.
Yeah. Just another name that I wanted to lob in there, Todd Cantwell, another youth prospect. He came in first half of the season. Has he kind of drifted out a little bit?
He made a couple
of mistakes. I think he might have scored a good goal against QPR, if I'm memory straight.
Maybe he had a rick.
I can't remember against QPR, but something happened at Loftus Road anyway.
In theory, they think next season he could become another Maddison, but he's not there yet.
Fine.
They've been playing him out wide as a bench option because he gets more time and he's less likely to be bullied when he goes up against centre halves. He's only 20. I think the physicality is still something he needs to work on. Very unselfish, creates space, and he's growing in confidence, but he's not there yet. It could cause them a problem if they get promoted, because I don't think if they got promoted he would be Premier League ready, so they might want to pull him out.
They did that with Madison, didn't they?
He will become a good all-action central midfielder, but they seem to be using him out wide at the moment. But he's very much a plan B.
Let's get to the back five then, because this is where we think we have a chance.
Right. Okay.
Do you want to do the centre backs or the full backs first, or Tim Krul?
Let's do the keeper.
At Newcastle, I quite liked Tim Krul. I thought he was decent. And then his kind of career drifted a bit. Brighton, I think, didn't he?
And he's
a bit meh. I don't think he's an exceptional goalkeeper, but I think he's just as, pardon the phrase, but he's a safe pair of hands, isn't he? But he's not. He's not infallible.
He's as good as they can afford. That's probably the best way to sum it up.
He was a freebie, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a freebie. Bear in mind, when we go look at the defence, experience is a topic that will come up when we look at the back five. And the thing he has got is experience. Dutch international.
Premier League experience as well. I think
in Brighton he didn't break through. I don't think he ever played for them, actually. But he was drifting there. If my research is right, he's still only 30. He's no spring chicken in that sense, but he's not for a keeper. He's still quite young. What to say about him? He's a decent shot stopper. Reaction saves, he's brilliant at. Great at penalties. I think he was the player who came on.
He was subbed on by for Holland, wasn't he?
Against Costa Rica, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the penalty shootout. Yeah. So, well, we don't get many penalties, do we?
No, we don't. Now, part of the reason I want Kwaner to be on the wing is because I want him to put crosses in, because this Krul has a weakness, flappy.
He also comes and goes quite a lot. I think he second guesses himself, I think.
Yeah, he does. There was a horrible goal they conceded against Sheffield United, where Zimmerman, because they mark zonally, which they do, and Zimmerman lost, I think it was Billy Sharper, if I'm not mistaken, and Krul didn't come out, and the ball was literally just a yard, maybe 7 yards, just outside the 6 yard box, and it was a keeper's ball to claim, or it was a defender's ball to get on. Neither of them did it,
similar to Villa's first goal against us a couple of weeks back.
Yeah, if you or I were there, we'd have fancied our chances. We really would have. We wouldn't have been there. But anyway, that's how flaky they can be. Yeah. So crosses particularly, he doesn't. You know, they said one of the most cynical comments was he should concentrate on doing his job, like claiming a cross once in a while. You know, that was in the Sheffield United game. They were obviously quite annoyed with him for not doing it. He is good in the atmosphere. He was good. His experience comes into play at Leeds. His personality helped galvanise the defence a bit, because obviously Leeds were throwing absolutely everything.
Yeah, there was a couple of really good saves in that one, to be fair to him.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've noted down in terms of the goals they concede is those crosses. It is tap-ins, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah.
Should we talk about the centre-backs? Because
yep.
I, not a big fan of Hanley. I think I might have mentioned this in one of our podcasts before. I've got a friend who's a Norwich fan, and for years, including in their Premier League years, they have never had decent centre backs. It was Michael Turner and Sebastian Bassong.
Oh God, yes.
And I would stick Grant Hanley on the list as a defender that, on paper, probably looks like he can do a job, but he's not great. No. Godfrey.
Yeah, Zimmerman Godfrey close. I think it is. Well, let's get Hanley out of the way quickly. As with Tete, I'd say he's fourth choice, actually. He's got completely the wrong skill set for the type of football Farke wants to play.
Because it's footballing centre backs, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is that fair?
Yeah, which is brave and risky, which means they concede a lot of goals, but it's because of what's going on in front of them. Grant Hanley doesn't coordinate with that, because he will just, you know, he just isn't technically good enough. The diplomatic phrase was, he really doesn't improve our options when it comes to playing out from the back. A very diplomatic
phrase. That was Villa, yeah. He's bloody crap.
Yeah, he launches it, basically. He's strong in the air, and he's a good organizer, and he gives them solidity. But he's in that it's and they think possibly his English experience could make a difference. He blotted his copybook. He played in the Portsmouth FA Cup game, which they lost 1-0, and he got sent off after 15 minutes.
Wasn't he karate kicking some guy just on the inside their half or something?
Yeah, it was a mad moment, but which has probably confirmed what everybody thinks. But he's worth mentioning because of the fact that he isn't being chosen. In terms of who will start, I think bizarrely it's a question of if Tim Close is fit, I think he will come in.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Just remember back to the 96th minute a year ago.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But he's slow, isn't he?
Yeah, he is slow. Yeah, he does. He's been recovering from a knee injury. He's been training. And I think it's to give them vulnerability. We talked about they are flaky at the back. In their last 7 games, their goal difference is, their last 7 home league games, that is, their goal difference is score 21, conceded 16. We'll ignore the score 21. It's 3 a game. We'll park that for one moment, and we'll concentrate.
No clean sheets in 2019, Harry. I'm going to jump in.
16 goals conceded, over 2 a game. You can't get promoted when you're conceding that number of goals. Anyway, Closer, I think they would, for that reason alone, they would try and have him back in because of his experience as much as anything else. He can read the game. They talk about that making up for his lack of pace. You're right, he's not the quickest. Without him, they look vulnerable to crosses, QED, against Sheffield United. His positioning is good. He wins so many headers and he chips in with goals. A foot in brackets, we know. And he can handle himself against more physical teams. He's not a rugged centre-half, but he's got a lot of know-how. Yeah. And I think with Krull behind him, they can just calm a very inexperienced back line down. Yeah. The alternatives, I think Zimmermann probably will play. He's the most likely. It's because he would be second in the hierarchy to close. And he brings the ball out again, footballing defender, returns and rumbles the ball. He's comfortable in possession. He's become very assured. But he, again, quite criticising his lack of ability in the air for such a big bloke. Damning with faint praise, largely dependable if unspectacular. His physicality is an asset, but he's not the most mobile. He plays better with the calming influence of Klose next to him. We see this every week. Sometimes it's actually the partnership at the back. It's why I think Collins and Chambers together is brilliant, because the two of them help each other.
Well, and then Chambers has had to be the dependable partner, and now Collins is the more experienced and takes the pressure off Chambers a bit. Because the other option is Godfrey, who's youth prospect. Yeah. Adelaide at Shrewsbury with Paul Hurst, didn't he?
Yeah. It's really funny, this, because we're all one-eyed when it comes to players who come through your own system. You want them to be brilliant, and they're full of praise for the guy. They think he's mobile, he's comfortable on the ball, he's quick, he's powerful, he has good footballing skills. He's only 20. When he came from York, he was on loan with Paul. He played for Paul Hurst last year on loan, so they love this young guy who's come through. He's not a youth prospect, but he's somebody who's blossomed in the team this season, so they really want him to do well. However, he is inexperienced, and one of them talked about them becoming leaky since Godfrey was introduced, because he is still, in relative terms, a rookie, a championship level. I think there was a Dwight Gale goal that was scored for West Brom against him at the turn of the year, which he was caught out with, and he was Birmingham. They beat Birmingham 3-1 a couple of weeks ago, and he was too deep, and he played Shea Adams onside. The Norwich went one up. Birmingham equalised, and Adams got the equaliser, and it was you get punished for your mistakes in the championship, and it was a Godfrey error. His positioning was wrong for that. So although they really want him to do well and they're full of praise for him on the ball, I do think there might be an error or two in there, so he could be targeted. Yeah. Even though for all of the praise he has, so that's the back line, as I said. The central defence, more accurately.
So we'll finish on the fullbacks, because if only we had ball playing attacking fullbacks we've got Kenlock, haven't we? But through the academy as well. I mean, they must be laughing about that. That's what you want to see. You want a good blend of experienced players, some foreign signings in there as well, but youth players being given a chance, which they certainly have given these two. But defensively, not brilliant, and there's been a few goals where they've been caught out trying to dribble out of danger, but they're pretty comfortable on the ball, aren't they?
Lewis. I was trying to work out, when reading up on what they were saying about who are they like, who are Norwich like, and I came up with a very Irish kind of answer, which was that they're kind of 50% Fulham, 50% Bournemouth, and 100% Dortmund. If you go with the maths, in the sense that you see elements of all three teams in them, and probably mostly Dortmund, but the other two as well. Where they are at their most Fulhamish is with their fullbacks, because if you remember under Jokanovic, the fullbacks were spent all their time up in the opposition half.
Line, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much, if not higher. It's the inclination of both Lewis and Aarons to do this. They're really attacking, and it's fundamental to the way they play. And they do worry about it, because it does leave the defence wide open at times, particularly if there isn't enough cover back.
It's Buendia and Hernandez, who are not defenders either. And as you say, there's mistakes defensively in both of those two as well.
Yeah, they talk about this. They say, going forward, we're awesome. Defensively, we're a shambles. A lack of experience, but also this lack of balance at the back.
Well, 39 goals against as well. I'm going to keep chipping in these.
No, do. One clean sheet and 11, and they are particularly worried. They talk about playing brave football, but it is a worry at the back. They can be left wide open. One of them says the way the full-backs push forward means the two centre-backs are basically doing the job of a back three, and this will always make us vulnerable to conceding goals. So in terms of the pair of them, Lewis has probably been around a little bit longer. He's 21. He's actually a Northern Ireland international now. They praise his work rate particularly, and they talk about him just being like a winger. Whereas Hernandez will push forward to the corner flag, his winger in front of him. Lewis will often cut inside. So again, if Steeperman vacates the space, it could be Lewis comes forward and then he kind of swerves in to attack the space. But again, aggressive work rate, they talk about. He works the flanks full of energy. But as I say, he can't get doubled up on when Hernandez doesn't cover. Aarons, I think, is the one they think is is the real prospect. I think he is the one with the quality. They're worried that, you know, he could end up going the route of the Murphys or Nathan Redmond, you know, going into playing a, certainly Redmond being becoming, sold. Being sold, we've got real Premier League
potential.
Probably
get 20 million for him or something stupid like that. Yeah.
They talk about he's got pace and an engine to cover. The phrase marauding fullback is always, it's always like a, it's a bit like
one,
it's an, or it's like midfield schemer, you know, it's one of those lovely phrases you hear every so often, but nobody, one of them said, and I think this is true. I think even it came up in Ben's chat on the Talk Norwich podcast, that nobody foresaw the emergence of Aarons to this degree.
Right.
It's an absolute bonus. It's a bit like when Tyrone Mings came and joined us and we realised, hang on, he's good. You know, we've suddenly got somebody here who can actually go on another level. And again, what you said earlier, he tries to play his way out of trouble occasionally. There are rookie errors still in his game. But the other positive they've said about him, they talked about him being a teenage man of steel. He gets kicked up in the air. He does get targeted physically, but he carries on regardless. He seems to have the equipment to deal with that. So
they're not tall. Yeah. But they've got good. Yeah. They're good physique. Oh man, athletic. Thank you. That's a bit more appropriate.
They're very athletic. Yeah, like,
but we were lobbing balls, weren't we? Above. I think it was Lewis, wasn't it, last season with Iorfa kind of chasing in.
Yeah.
So don't be surprised if we kind of target them for height. Maybe if it's Kwana out wide on the right and.
Yeah,
I don't know. Sears on the left, maybe high balls to the corners might work for us. I'm not sure.
It's a way through, and teams have got at them. Certainly, the goals that I've seen scored, you know, looking not even just the recent games, but they can be got at around. Or if you can get in, you know, if you can put something into the box, a set piece or something in around the 6-yard box, they're not necessarily that comfortable defending in the air, particularly if Klose isn't playing. So they can concede goals. And there is an interesting parallel with the Leeds game. The thing Norwich are brilliant at, they're ruthless finishers. And there was a period in that first half against Leeds for 30 minutes when Leeds absolutely battered them, but they were able to withstand everything Leeds came at them with.
They got lucky a few times as well.
And the point being that if you could invert the image and say, okay, if Norwich do come at us, if we can be clinical with our chances that they do give us, if we suddenly go a goal or two goals up against them, then suddenly you're thinking, hang on, the whole pendulum of the game suddenly swings. And the questions, because something which came up again in Ben's podcast earlier this week, Norwich, since they got relegated, and when Mick, the first games against Mick in this latest series of games they've been, going back to when Mick took over, because the onus is on them, the expectation is on them, they are always nervous.
Well, it's shown, isn't it, the last few games?
Always.
Low scoring.
Yeah, yeah.
Few draws here and there as well.
They rarely come out all guns blazing. They always tend to be tentative. They're always apprehensive. I don't know if it'll change on Sunday, but they don't, as a rule, come out and just rip into us. It tends to be, a little bit, oh my God, it's Ipswich. Oh, this is a game with consequences. We're expected to win. Mm. And then, which then puts the game, settles the game down on a very even footing. So well, just a thought that.
We're bottom of the table as well, let's not forget. There's two things that I just want to finish on before we kind of go into the questions and maybe talk a little bit about us. Is narrative. Two bits of narrative that I want to talk to you quickly about. One is top versus bottom. And how that's playing out. The second is Lambert. And then I guess I want to talk a little about what they're saying about us as well as part of the same thing. Because Jack Reeve, to me, is kind of an island in a sea of smugness and arrogance. And I don't know where that's come from, really. But the way that Norwich talk about us and your blog that will go up on TWTD at the end of the week, if you want to get riled up and pissed off before you go to Carrow Road, read what they've got to say about us.
I've got a team
narrative, Harry. This kind of top v bottom thing, is that coming out or is it all about Lambert?
Yeah, well, this is the 10th blog I've done for TWTD on Norwich. And there's always two things come up, and it's A, wariness, and B, irrational optimism.
Right.
But, you know, so in other words, it's either, oh my God, this is a dangerous game, it's a banana skin, et cetera, et cetera, or it's, we're going to wipe the floor with them, they're lucky to be on the same pitch as us. And it's always then a question of where the weight of expectation lies. And I have to say, certainly 12 months ago, they were way more apprehensive, and they thought, oh, they're due a win. was the team that came up when
I was searching. The home game in September.
Yeah,
actually,
it's their turn. Not this time. Right. No, it's very, very different. On with Lambert specifically, they are. It's interesting. The general view should be that they're trying to be objective about it and say just applaud them, treat them like any other manager, give them a polite round of applause. What they should do not want to do is to stoke the flames.
Yeah, because give him a boo. Come on.
Yeah. They said this. Booing will only inspire him. He clearly loves playing devil's advocate. They know what he's like. He's a motivator. He will want to destabilize the atmosphere in a way.
Yeah. He'll be doing all kinds of stuff on the touchline, won't he? Yeah. I mean, he does that anyway, but.
Yeah, but deliberately, because if the game becomes unsettled, particularly if you've got these inexperienced players out on the field, they can lose their focus, they can lose their position, they can suddenly get distracted by the atmosphere of what's going on, bang, make a mistake, and we're in.
That's, well, the threat is down the side as well, so Lambert, he might be having a good, fun afternoon for himself, Lambert.
Yeah, it's interesting. But,
they're saying don't boo him, though. They're trying to not get sucked
in. Apparently, one of them said there will be a large anti-Lambert contingent singing particular songs that have swirled around Carrow Road for the last few weeks, and in a sense, who can blame them? So we'll see what they come up. They'll see what they come up with.
Arguably their most successful manager,
But then they say that the consensus seems to be that this team that Fark has put together, now this could be tinted spectacles, they think that this team that they have now is way better than the team of 2010-2011. So that could be that. But
I guess it's been established by a combination of Championship and Premier League and foreign experience rather than coming out through the leagues.
Yeah.
I guess the football is maybe a bit more.
Yeah. You get the extreme view. One of them said he's a mercenary taking advantage of a car crash of a football club. Agent Lambert kind of nonsense going on as well. But that's really the theme that's come out in terms of him. In terms of the game itself, and what they think of the two of us, tactically is interesting. A few of them try to talk about us being a physical team, and we're going to, you know, lower league cloggers kind of approach. They will be disappointed. One of them said, I'm not sure they're as physical as people expect. Perhaps that could be their problem. And they said, in fairness to Lambert, they don't recall any of his clubs playing like cloggers. They don't think that's going to happen. The one thing that they have all said is that if Ipswich sit off and let Norwich have the ball, Norwich will run rings around them.
Yes.
We cannot sit back. We've got to go after them, because Birmingham tried this other approach a couple of weeks ago, because they're a counter-attacking team under Gary Monk. They set back 4-4-1-1, let them come on to us, and then we'll see what they do. Once they scored a couple of goals, Birmingham were then frightened to come onto them, because they were...
We won't get out of our half if we sit back. The errors are made by pressing them up the top of the pitch, and the trouble is we just haven't got bodies up the field in the whole season, have we?
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to see whether he goes for it.
Yeah, you've got to fight fire with fire. I really think so. In terms of, let's have a look at some of their views. Just a few thoughts. It's you get, as I say, the wary school first. I hope we don't underestimate them. On paper, it looks like we should destroy them, but it can be hard playing bottom teams. This could be a banana skin, and ideally, we would kill the game off by half time. It's always in there. One of them said, interestingly, our unbeaten run against them has to end eventually. But personally, I think that they missed their chance to do that in the last four fixtures. I think that is a fair comment, actually. They're worried about us underestimating them. Take nothing for granted and hope we don't screw it up. One of them said the footballing gods may have decreed that Lambert will return and beat us next Sunday, and that's my concern.
Well, there's some narrative for you, as is beating Norwich but still getting relegated.
Yeah, that's exactly. The story to me. You know, it's like the old spy check in chess, where you're going to lose the game but you finish it. You put the opposition king in check and then you resign. You go down swinging, exactly. The more optimistic Canaries. Here we go. I've never gone
it's
into
Barcelona
the dark...
mentioned, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's just like watching Barcelona. That is in there. Yes,
yep,
indeed.
Yep.
I've never gone into a derby more confident than I have with this one. I wouldn't swap playing them on Sunday for any other opposition. They're the worst team in the league by a distance. There was the one about the. Yes. we're all aware of possibilities, but this is probably the sorriest bunch of failures Ipswich have dragged up the A140 in any City fan's time. I ran this one past Rich before we started recording, and you came back with a lovely retort.
Well, they'll know about dragging crappy teams down the A140 because we've seen exactly. a few of them. Let's not, let's not pretend that they've been always good for the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I'll be a bag of nerves on the day until we're 3-0 up. why is the club and fans saying it's a big game? It should be the easiest game of the season. They weren't saying this in September, I can tell you that.
But, you know, statistically, they're not wrong, are they? But it's just, and this is the trouble I've got, is that year after year, we hear this kind of stuff. And year after year, there's just no, you know, there's, I just don't like how this unrequited arrogance never gets, you know, pride comes before a fall.
Yeah.
And to me, I just, you know, poor Ipswich, we've been kicked in the ghoulies for the whole damn season. We've had, you know, 17, 18 years of Championship football, nothing to cheer about, no victories over them.
Yeah.
You know, how long is it going to be until people, you know, there's Town fans who have been born for about 10 years who have, you know, never seen us beat Norwich. Mm. It's just crazy. So, as I say, the narrative for me is we beat them now and it doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
And it just dents their promotion credentials a tiny bit, but.
As I say, if we can, just trip their legs up. But equally, you listen to all of that guff, and you think, well, where's the burden of expectation? Who's the pressure on?
Yeah, yeah, top of the league, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We've come up with our list of what needs to happen for us to win, but we've also got our clutching at straws list. Should we quickly go through this? Because there's set pieces which we don't attack out. Pressing them with dribbles, getting crosses into the box. But there's holding fish up to the manager. That works against Peter Grant, 3-1. So that's one. Dent your fish.
Okay, I've got a few things that we can smuggle into the ground, which might work.
Danny Haynes, were you smuggling him into the ground as well? Yep.
Well, that's a thought. I never thought of that. That could be brilliant. It'd be good.
Get him free.
Yeah, exactly. Sure, he'd be up for it as well. Even a quick 10-minute cameo would scare them. I was kind of looking at more a couple of animate things and a few inanimate things. A black cat. Some of these we can get into the ground. Acorns. Lucky omens.
Acorns. Keys.
Yeah, acorns are lucky. So these are all good luck omens.
Okay.
Rabbit's foot, we know. Four-leaf clover, if you can find any, that we can smuggle that in. Lucky dice, keys. Horseshoes might be tricky. That could be problematic.
Bring
unless
Bluey.
You were saying, or Bluey crazy, could actually get some. Yeah. What else have we got? There's also, if anybody knows how an evil eye works, they can get their hands on one. We can bring one of those in as well. But I'm not so sure about that. There's a couple of other lucky omens I found. In Germany, pigs are seen as lucky, as good luck omens. Pigs are lucky.
They
in
should
Germany.
Know they eat enough of them, don't they?
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, there's a
too much.
When we did the Dusseldorf friendly, I went over onto their forum and translated a load of their comments. The number of pig metaphors that came up was unbelievable.
Oh,
it really was. Yeah, it's like a player was, you know, he's not the last great player to drive a swine through the village kind of thing. It's a but I was thinking, get in touch with Eric Gates, maybe get a few lucky pigs on the field as well, just to in Ipswich colours, just to kind of freak the German Norwich
Eric
players.
Eric Gates is a pig farmer, is he?
Indeed, he was. No, he certainly
was.
Yeah, I don't know if he's or not still, but he'll know how he can work that one for us. And the final one, which is a bit drastic, is in Asia, elephants are seen as good luck charms. So again, I was thinking three elephants, one on the D and then one on the other side of the goal, just to back up the
well, maybe just cram all three of them inside the net.
Exactly.
Score now, Pookie. Park the elephants.
Love
it.
So we have that as an option. If anyone can come up with anything else to add to it, by all means do. But
there you go, everyone. We've tried our best for you. I don't think any of us is ignoring the difficulty the challenge facing us, but you never know.
They are beatable,
Should we do Daryl's team? And firstly, many happy returns to Daryl.
Hear, hear.
Happy birthday. On the day that we're recording this, he shares his birthday with Mikma and someone else as well. I forget who that is. So happy birthday, Daryl. Let's go through his joint team. Did you figure out what formation this is? He doesn't give us it. He just gives us a list of players, doesn't he? So
I think it's a 3-5-2 from what I can see. Yeah.
So I've got issues with the goalkeeper straight away, which is Andy Marshall.
He's put Andy in goal.
Given there are much better keepers on the bench in Aaron Lee Barrett and 5'5" Clive Baker.
Clive Baker.
But Andy Marshall gets the nod from Daryl.
Well, I don't know. We could see. We'll see. Who's got in front of the? Some of these are of older vintage. The centre backs we've got. There's Bobby Bell, who was from. He was 68 to 71. So he was late '60s, early '70s, the early Bobby era. Matthew Bates, who had a fleeting career at Portman Road.
Well, he played in the 3-1 win over Norwich, didn't he? In classic Luke Chadwick.
He did, but he went back. I think he picked up a knee injury. He was on loan for Borough, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And I think he was a Hartlepool manager, if I'm not mistaken. I think till recently. I know he was still involved in the game.
Time marches on, doesn't it? Bloody hell!
Yeah, does hell exactly. David Wright as well. Was the
scored
other
at center. Norwich.
He did. Yep. So we'll have him. Even though I think he's in their coaching staff.
I think he is. Yeah, he left Colchester to join them.
Yeah. So the two wingers, Johnny Miller on the right. He's got Louis Donoa as well on. So I've gone Miller right, Donoa left, but possibly they can alternate. They're kind of, we've no fullbacks, so we've got to work them both in. There is a lack of, actually, Kevin Lisby is on the bench. Healy could play as that. We've David Healy as well. They can both play. They could both play in a wide role. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Mm-hmm. But the three central midfielders, Trevor Putney, Peter Morris, and Morris Putney, obviously we know. Morris again goes back to the 60s. He was late '60s, early '70s, and the great Clive Woods. And it scared me to realise he's 71. My lord, how time flies by. Up front, we've got lots of options, and Darrell's gone with Alan Lee, which makes sense. He was, because I think he played on loan. He wasn't there at Norwich for long, but he played against us
3-2. He didn't get a good reception, and then he came back and joined the coaching staff, and everyone forgot about it. He came back as a player, didn't he?
He did. He did come back as a player. It was the past revisit and John Dean as well, because he went from Villa to Norwich, and then from Norwich to us in the mid 80s. And plan our options on the bench. You see, Keith Burchin.
It's decent.
He's a decent striker. You could put him in. I could see why he went with Lee and Dean, though. You've got David Healy. He had a couple of loans from Preston when he was a Preston player. He went to Norwich and then he was on loan with us as well from Sunderland. Lisby and Jordan Rhodes, obviously, as well.
Jordan
Rhodes
got to be on the bench, isn't he?
Got to be on the bench. Yep. He does indeed. Yep. And then there's a midfielder who I don't know. Does the name Tom Adeyemi ring a bell with you?
I don't think he's played for Ipswich, has he? I'm not sure.
I don't think he has. I'm not sure. He's on the bench. We leave him in. We'll give Darrell the benefit of the doubt. And the other comment, do you want to bring up the other comment?
He's mentioned Ian Crook, who doesn't know which way to go. He's on the A140 kind of going around and doing UEs because it's drenched on a deadline day and he doesn't know where to go. Ian Crook, the Hassan Kashlul of the 90s.
Oh, the one that got away.
There's a photo, you can find it, of him holding an Ipswich shirt. That it does exist. I've seen it. Never mind.
It's like Delia on FA Cup final day, isn't it?
Yes.
It is rumoured to exist. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good dear. Stuff. Thank you for that. And obviously managed by Paul Lambert, obviously.
Indeed, absolutely. And thank you, Darrell. Thank you so much. And the happiest of birthdays to you, mate. Happiest of birthdays.
There's a present for you on Sunday. And just finishing off Norwich, for those watching on YouTube, the shirt's behind me. 2003, the 2-0 away win. Bodic assist for Wilness and Darren Bennett in the last minute. Past Robert Green, and that one is the Danny Haynes handball last minute goal. So two away wins at Carrow Road shirts that I've managed to dig out. I've bought three. I've been on eBay prolifically this week, so hopefully one or two of them will make an appearance before the end of the season. One is I finally got my hands on the promotion winning shirt from the 91-92 season. So I never owned it as a kid, so that's added to the collection this week, so hopefully that will get an airing in more ways than one,
fingers crossed,
before the end of the season. Let's finish off with some questions, Harry. We've got plenty, so we'll do our best to get through as many of these as we can. Barry Mann asks about the weak link in the Norwich team. He mentions Cruel, but he follows up and asks the question, when we beat Norwich, winky smiley face, do you see that as the possible kickstart to the Great Escape, or just another Swansea result that gives us faith for an extra game? It's probably the latter, isn't it, at this stage? Or is this the potential game that Lambert wants to...
Depends on the win. It depends, and it depends on how the front four connect. Right. To me, the whole thing hangs on that. If they can click, then that changes the whole balance of the team. You play further up the field, etc. That's what it feels like we're waiting for Godot. It'll never happen, but that's what I'm looking for. If they can connect, if it's a jammy, ugly win, well, we'll take it. But if there's some fluency in the attacking third, then you think, okay, we're onto something here.
Indeed, yeah.
That's my view.
Mikey Smith of the Blue Monday team says, do you expect us to win a tight game or win by a few?
Well, I think a few. Once we go two up, then the self-doubt will creep in.
As long as we make it safe by half-time, that's all I care.
And then we just keep hitting them on the counter then.
Harvey Davis asks us all formation. There's a wink there for people on YouTube on that one. It's a great question, Mikey. Harvey Davis asks, is it time to give 3-5-2 another go? Pennington could play in his natural position. Judge can play the number 10, and we can have two strikers. Granted, it didn't work v Brentford in the season, but we've got the personnel to play it now. Thoughts 3-5-2, or specifically, can I ask you on the two up front? Because Dave Diamond has been going on about this for quite some time. A lot of questions about it too.
Yeah.
Thoughts on three at the back and two up top?
I'm nervous, I have to say. We touched on it earlier. The danger of playing 4-4-2 for starters is the two get isolated. The danger of playing 3-5-2 is that we're flaky enough out wide anyway that it could end up becoming a 5-3-2. And with midfielders getting dragged out to act to double up on whoever's coming down the side. Given where we are at the moment, I wouldn't touch anything. I would just try and get this model working efficiently. But I can see the point. It's where the balance. It's trying to get the right balance, I guess.
I agree that there's some merit inconsistency. I think we just need to get bodies forward. I think no one would be banging on about the one up front if the one up front wasn't so isolated. I think that's the issue.
Yeah.
But I think there's some fair shouts there. Simo, I think, again, kind of endorsing what we said, you can dress our season up any way you like. But the way I see it is we are just not very good. A win on Saturday would be great, but I don't think it could start a late revival. So Simo thinks similarly to us perhaps there. But again, we think dependent on the type of win, if there's a win, if, big if. Harry, throw who's in, why not? Possibly because he's not fit. That would be the only reason, wouldn't it?
I don't think he's fit. No, I don't think he is. It's he would be perfect in there. You could him or Teddy, or him and Teddy with Skews sitting behind them. In a dream world, that would, you know, if we were functioning normally, that would be ideal. Yeah.
Sound like Bishop had a good game against Sheffield Wednesday, but he didn't finish the game. So I'd quite like to see Teddy Bishop in there. Town boy, I think he might. Benjamin Bloom. Oh, I need to stop asking Blue Monday team questions, but he's kind of gone with this acceptance curve thing that I've talked about before. Feels like Town fans are on stage four of coping with being shit. Hope, denial, blame one player, blame the formation, blame the manager, blame the owner, discuss. I think from what I've heard or what I've seen on Twitter, there's somewhere between four and five, isn't there?
Yeah.
But I think blame the owner is number one for me all the time. I blame the owner for starting from that and then work from there.
I'd probably skip stage five. I know I've said this before. Please cut Lambert some slack. Please do. You've no idea what he inherited. The more you look at it, the worse it is. You talk about lack of balance in a team, and Hurst utterly, utterly unbalanced the team on all levels, and you know it's such a rebuilding job that Lambert's had to do. So I would just, you know, in terms of blaming the manager, I would really put that in brackets. Let him have a summer window,
yes,
to try and just reset the thing. It is, you know, we could do an hour on just so there was so much damage. You could do an hour on it comfortably and still not get to the bottom of it. Right. In terms of tactics, in terms of transfers, in terms of morale, in terms of training, fitness, you name it. Everything was done so badly.
Yep.
Anyway, moving on. I'm kind of in the, if we're blaming someone, I'm with Evans, possibly. I can see why the formation is getting questioned as well. If in the sense that you can't not change something.
Arthur Pickthorne asks us about the three at the back. I think we've answered that and given our opinion. I think if we just clog up the defence, we'll sit back and we'll be picked off. But he asks, if Chambers, Collins and Pennington are all fit, who plays? I'll lob Enciana in there. If Chambers and Collins are fit, they've got to start, haven't they?
They've got to start, yeah. Because it does mean then that the midfield is less hell-bent on having to protect them. Because I did, from what I saw of the Wednesday game, my sense was that Lambert was mindful of that in the way the team was set up. Which didn't help in terms of inviting Wednesday onto us. Shoot me down if I'm wrong, but I was just going on what I was watching on the screen. But that's how it felt to me. Whereas when you've got Collins and Chambers in there, it doesn't theoretically free the midfielder to go and have a little look at what's going on at the other end of the field, and it might help get us forward.
Benjamin Aerie, when was the last time you remember the bottom four of the championship being so poor? I wonder whether there's a view here that because we're part of it, we know how bad the teams are around us. I think usually you kind of watch from a distance, but now we're part of it, it's pretty poor quality down there, isn't there?
Oh, it's shocking. No, it's the worst quartet. I mean, they are absolute basket cases, all four teams. The only reason Rotherham are struggling, to be fair to them, is because they just lack quality. I always say one team goes down because they're not big enough, and that would be Rotherham if they do drop. But the other three are, case studies. Yeah.
Indeed, how not to manage a football club. Alex Pryke and James Mealing, kind of, I'll merge this together. How much is this going to hurt? James says, will it ever get better? I hope so, James.
I read that out to my Italian mate Vince this morning because there was a plaintive, there was a sad face beside it. Will it ever get better? And you just went, you know, it's this kind of, what have we done?
I think I warned James. I think he asked a question maybe a couple of months ago, 3 months ago, what it's going to be like. And I said, this is probably the worst it could be in terms of the scenarios that I painted out to you. So apologies, James, if I've predicted the future. But how much is this going to hurt in terms of losing to Norwich? I mean, they expect to beat us, we expect to lose. So I'd take a narrow defeat, Frank, at this point. But
I'm philosophical about this one. It's not. No, it won't be a. It won't be a darkened room at the end of it. To be honest,
it won't matter. As long as we don't get absolutely pummeled. Will it get better? I bloody hope so, James. I hope so. Our good friend Mrs. Nuts, how are your current states of mind? You've just given us a bit of an insight there. Mine is a mix of having a funny tummy crossed with the feeling of constant anxiety you get when you've gone out and you think you've left the gas on.
Yeah.
Is supporting Ipswich Town like thinking you've left the gas on or left the oven on or...
It's true, actually. I think Mrs. Nuts has put her finger on something in the sense that it's like a dull toothache that's kind of accompanied us all season. I mean, Lambert, to be fair, has been very gracious. He said we're all supporting him, and he knows how horrible it is when a season like this goes wrong, and we're all having to live with it. But it does feel like, that's what it feels like to me. It's like this. So it's like some dull ache that's kind of ambling along in the background, and every time you turn your mind to it, you just think, "Oh God, no!" It's like it's like a pile of invoices, and you think, "Oh, I'll come back to them later," kind of thing. Yeah, there's no, and that's the sad thing is, but it's been like that for so long for us. Just to have something to cheer would be fantastic.
Yep, and in terms of current state of mind, I'm in acceptance, Harry. I'm not in bargaining anymore, so I will happily take a win on Saturday, but I certainly don't expect it. Daryl asks, do we give birthday shout-outs? I think we've already answered that one, so many happy returns again. Couple more. Is there anything to... Beanie, the Ipswich Bean, is there anything to show that the relegation to the third tier will be the bottom of our barrel, the only way is up, or do we have further to fall? God... I think we've got high hopes of Lambert in League One, don't we?
I would say so. I think he'll have a bigger rebuilding job to do, and he hinted at that in today's press conference. He felt that he inherited a really good squad that was a Brian Gunn. I think didn't configure right, and when Lambert got in there, he felt he had some brilliant material, and he was able it was a question of just getting them structured. I think this will be more of a rebuild, but I think I would trust Lambert to be able to do that, because not only for what he can do, but also for who he can attract in as well. I would hope.
And just to supplement that very quickly, Ed Copestake says we all dream about doing a Leicester or Southampton, but League One look like in terms of one season or multiple seasons to come back? Do you think it's a slow build is necessary because of the kind of long-term damage that has maybe been done, or do you think if it could work for Lambert, it could be quite a quick one?
Oh no, there's a real disparity between the Championship and League One now, as Hurst found out ruinously to his cost. And in theory, if we go down, there's no reason why, if we can hold the core of what we have together, and then there's a lot going to go, but there's enough in terms of the younger players. If you can hold on to players like Judge, you know, people of that quality, fingers crossed someone like Chambers as well, the experience of him and someone like Skuse, if they would stay, you could then launch, you've got a platform on which to build. Because I think there's as big a difference of a leap now between League One and the Championship as there is between the Championship and the Premier League. And I can think of several clubs, looking back over the blogs I've done over the years, who've made quick promotions from League Two to League One to the Championship. Yeovil, Burton and Rotherham all talked about that the fact you go League Two to League One, no problem at all. League One to the Championship, bloody hell. It's a huge leap. So in theory, if you're dropping down, we should have enough about us, hopefully, in terms of the scale of the club, etc., to be able to, and as long as we don't, you know, thankfully having Lambert, but we should have enough to be able to rebuild and push and hopefully spin and go back up again.
Yeah, I can't see a double relegation game. Well, I can't foresee it. Can't foresee anything at the moment, but I agree with you that Rotherham is one of the best teams that the League One has to offer, and they're hovering above the relegation zone in the Championship. So
yeah.
There is a lot of chaff in League One, just as much as there are teams that probably fancy their chances of going up.
Yeah.
FPL tractor very quickly. Your thoughts on Knudsen? There was a 2-3 vote in favour of him being given a chance, but Lambert appears to have poured cold water on that. Thoughts on Knudsen?
I thought about this all day because I know thought it might come up. I saw him a close hand again in the Stoke game, and I felt he was playing within himself. I was right on the touchline and watching him. I feel he left the club in his mind before Christmas, and I think pulling that back. The other thing I'd lob in is he suited to our style of football? Going back to what we were talking about with Tete and Grant Hanley with Norwich, is he more of a Mick type of player?
Yeah.
For whom, you know, there's no way in God's earth Knudsen would ever play in the Norwich team, for example, because of how they're set up. He is more like Hanley. He's an out-and-out defender. And I think for the type of football that Lambert is trying to get us to play. But that said, we are so appalling in our wide defensive roles. I've never known anything like this before in terms of just how vulnerable we seem to be constantly. And we also get so heavily punished. You can see the argument for bringing him in, but the weight of opinion for me is against at the moment, I have to say. But
So apologies to Average FIFA Dad and Andy Grimes. I think there's some tactical questions there that I'm hoping we've answered in terms of the formation of personnel and not sitting back. I think we probably agree with you, Andy, there. Any advice for Nick R going to Carrow Road for the first time? I think behave yourself. Don't get caught into trouble. It's a tough one to enjoy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. No, it's a game. I think I remember, it was about 6 years ago when they first came down again, when Mick was in charge, a Norwich fan saying, he said, it's actually not a game you necessarily enjoy, even if you win. There's often just you come out of it with a sense of relief rather than necessarily coming out feeling, you know, all gung-ho, we've conquered the world kind of thing. But I do hope, just echoing something that Ben talked about in the Talk Norwich podcast earlier in the week, if there are problems from a policing point of view, just let everybody know what's going on. So therefore, if you manage the crowd that way, hopefully things won't escalate in the way they did last year. Yeah,
Look out for each other, I think. And Nick, I hope you enjoy it, Nick. The atmosphere will be great. Hopefully the sound will sink throughout. Yeah. And never know, Nick, you might be the lucky charm that we've needed all this time.
Exactly.
We'll end on a good one. Simon, Portman Ginge, what has been your favourite Old Farm derby goal? His would be Alex Matthews' first of his hat-trick in the Destruction Derby in 98.
Oh God, yeah, that was a great goal. That was phenomenal. I have to say, I keep going back because I show it to all my friends time and time again. The miss kick, the divot.
Brian Gunn, yeah, another.
The divot. You just any neutral fan who comes into the shop or anybody I'm chatting to and say, you know, how big is the Norwich Ipswich game? I say, let me show you, and you just show them that, and they just go walk out of the shop or they finish the conversation just falling around the place laughing, and the look on is it Ulla Thorne's face, the look of, oh my God, you know,
what am I supposed to know?
The look of, oh no, you know, and he knew that this was this chasm of the future, you know, this will be looked at in 100 years' time. That's my one. What about you, Richard?
I'm a big fan of the Matthew one. I a short mention for Gary Megson's late stoppage time headed winner own goal at Christmas time in 93, I think it was.
Yeah.
One of my favourite ones, actually, for a weird reason, was Darren Benson for the 2003 game that I've got the shirt behind, where he scored, I think it was quite late on, he ran through and slotted past Rob Green. I was listening to that. I'd found a way to listen to it on the radio through the computer. I was at university in the... because it was before Wi-Fi and halls of residence and all that kind of fun stuff, you had to go to the computer lab on campus to use the computer. So I was listening there with headphones on and hadn't really reacted to the first goal. And then when Darren Benn ran through to score the winner, I'm there with a computer lab on a Sunday afternoon full of students going absolutely mental on in this computer lab. No one knows why. They can't hear it. And I'm there going, Cut! So that's one of my favourite ones. Darren Benn, just from Aston University IT lab on a Sunday afternoon. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Thank you for all the questions. Sorry for the ones we didn't read out.
Thank you.
Plenty there. Do you want to give us your plugs, Harry, where we can find your pre-match blog and all that?
Up at lunchtime Friday on TWTD. And it'll be... you can find it on my Twitter handle, which is at Harry from Bath.
Brilliant stuff. And you can find me at Ips Rich and the channel at Blue Monday ITFC. I am off to Oxford v Sunderland on Saturday, getting a ticking off the ground, getting some football in before Saturday. I'm travelling down with my mate Seb, and I've been sorted out tickets by a friend, a guy called Tom as well, who sorted me out. So thank you, Tom. And hopefully I'll see an entertaining game on Saturday, and I'll see a crappy 1-0 Ipswich Town victory on Sunday. Yeah. Me and my mate Seb are watching on the telly. We'll turn it off if it's looking bad. We'll go to the pub instead.
So are you
watching with the South West guys, Harry?
Yeah, I'm gonna. Yes, that's the plan. Heading over Sunday morning. Yeah, it should be good.
Hello to the South West guys. Thank you for that. Brilliant always, and we'll be back next week for preview of the Blue Monday live show.
You're here. Have a great weekend, everyone.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.